One Pixel Jump for July 29th, 2010.
I feel like the only thing I need to say about the ending of Bubblegum Crisis 2040 is that Nene and Lena save themselves by turning into space dolphins.
There's never any explanation for why they're dolphins. I mean, what's so great about being a dolphin? I think a dolphin would burn up in the atmosphere just as well as a suit of armor.
Especially because they don't really change anything other than the shape of the armor. If the armor can fall from space to the Earth as a dolphin, it can probably fall from space to the Earth as a hard suit.
And later on, Pris's hard suit changes too, and it's got a lot more to it, but it seems to withstand just as well.
Well, Pris's change to her hard suit is distinctly different because her hard suit goes through like 5 or 6 total changes.
And it's actually 2 hard suits.
Because she runs out of power while fighting Galatea after, or Galatea as I prefer to pronounce it because I think that's actually how it's pronounced. During that fight, she turns into sort of a monstrous version of herself. It's kind of complicated because her suit goes rogue all of a sudden. Oh, yeah, we should probably explain that. The hard suits work the way they do because they are boomers.
The hard suits being boomers, they had to completely get new suits, in which they have to suddenly be naked under the suits.
That bothers you to no end, doesn't it?
Doesn't it bother you?
The only reason that it does bother me is because of the way nudity is portrayed in this series.
You mean anatomically inaccurately?
Well, it is anime, after all. Although I don't really... I guess it was just something that happened in the 90s, because in the original Bubblegum Crisis, they were naked all the time, and you got to see as much nipple as you wanted, provided that you paused it like a creepy weirdo, which I totally didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't. Did you ever?
Then how do you know?
Because you and I I'm just guessing. I would assume that you could pause it. You and I watched the original Bubblegum Crisis together. You should know whether or not I paused it to look.
But I mentally blocked that out, and you should too.
But it doesn't... I kind of understand why they need to have the skin-tight whatever with them. And it was
Earlier, it was okay for them to wear suits under the suits.
Yeah, but you got to see them, like, undress. And that was kind of nice, wasn't it? Am I alone on this? Am I alone on this charge?
Yes.
Well, you can do whatever you want, but I am pro Lena nudity. Actually, I do find it a little bit unsettling. Not due to anything.
I bet you wouldn't find it quite as appealing if it was Leon Daly.
We've already talked about
maybe this is why Leon wanted a hard suit, too.
Because he wanted to be naked.
So they could change naked together.
Yeah, exactly. Although I don't think Pris would have let him. Not that it matters. They don't actually end up with each other at the end of the series anyway.
Not geographically.
Not planetarily. Pris is in space.
No, she's not. She landed in the desert.
That's right. She, along with Pris, lands in the desert. Lena and Nene land on a deserted island together, presumably to form a lesbian naked society.
Somehow they seem so happy to be stranded.
Considering that their only other option was to burn up in the atmosphere while falling to Earth, it's a little bit better. They'll probably...
I mean, like, but this way, you know, they're probably gonna have to starve to death.
No. Well, one of them won't. You know, Lena will just eat Nene.
Just eat Gilligan.
Just eat Nene. Come on. You know, they're naked anyway. You can sort of see how much meat she's got on her.
Not much.
Okay, that's fair.
This is an anime. They aren't chunky people.
Well, she's got a lot of meat in certain places. As you said, this is an anime.
You mean fat, then?
No.
Well, that would sustain Lena for a while, and then maybe she could pay back that guy from earlier in the series.
Yeah, exactly. But it's... I want to talk about the story of everything that leads up to this, but I cannot get the ending out of my mind. I want to talk about how they discover some sort of super boomer that was based off of Lena. Because apparently you can grow a completely original twin of a person as a robot by implanting a seed in their brain.
Well, you know, you can't if you're the big bad or if you're an evil scientist.
Well,
so it's this half of the series that takes the series to an actual plotline with a big bad and some way to stop this oncoming horde of rogue boomers.
Admittedly, this is it's more plot-based and a lot less character arc-based, although the plot is really based around the growth of Cilia, so it's a little character-based. The big thing that we find out is the reason the hard suits are so awesome by comparison to the AD police is that they are in fact boomers.
It's kind of disappointing that there's a reason behind that, and it's not just AD police sucks.
Well, okay, to be fair, the AD police doesn't suck any less for it. But
I mean, come on, they burnt down Pris's CD collection. That pissed her off.
That was a pretty funny one, I have to admit. I like Pris more in 2040 because she has a little bit more of a motivation. But her motivation for hating the AD police in the original was because she was dating someone in the AD police and they got killed in a boomer attack. In this, she hates the AD police because they broke one of her CDs when she was a little kid.
Oh, she's Pris. That's enough.
I'd like to think that Pris deserves a little more credit than that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I never really focused on Pris when I got to this because Lena exists as a character, and it's hard for me to not focus on her.
What about Maki, the robot boy who could?
Compare.
Shut down.
Hard disk read failure.
Derp, derp.
Looks like you should have had a backup, Cilia.
Oh!
Have a backup brother.
Well, he did back up his memory right before he got taken over and went crazy.
Was that what happened? I was under the I was under the impression that Galatea decided that God exists because people die. And
I don't know. The big bad motivation wasn't just horribly clear. Just like, okay, I don't know why I'm here, so I'm gonna get rid of stuff, okay?
Well, Galatea's motivation is acceptable. It's the resolution of it that doesn't make any sense.
Considering all this story build-up, it's such an abrupt ending.
Yeah.
It's like they ran out of money, like a video game.
What do you mean, like they ran out of money? They ran out of money.
Maybe they're just OCD about keeping it the perfect number of episodes. 26.
26. 26, 27 is the ultimate episode number.
They couldn't squeeze out number 27.
The golden mean being Cowboy Bebop.
Bang. Hey, Cowboy Bebop didn't have a clear resolution either.
Cowboy Bebop has a very clear resolution.
It has an open-to-interpretation resolution.
That's only because Shinichiro Watanabe was like, hey, I never said Spike was dead. And everyone was like, God damn it. Just kick him. Then he made Samurai Champloo, and that was alright. I can get behind more of that. Just because the story leading up to them going into space, despite being the main thrust of 2040, is actually not that complicated and really all that diverse, because all that happens is they discover the super boomer, Galatea, or Galatea as they pronounce it. Then she causes everything to go rogue, because boomers, when encountering the Voomer phenomenon, the little translation trick there, since they blatantly say Voomer somewhere on the screen at some point. I thought that was
right
so
along
weird.
With Red Hot Snack.
Well, at least Red Hot Snack sounds like it could actually be something. I don't understand why robots run on voodoo.
Because it's Bubblegum Crisis 2040.
I contend that there was never a single mention of voodoo except for that one time, and it still doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know what? I contest that there's never been a single mention of bubblegum.
No, that's not where the name comes from, though.
Where does it come from again?
The idea is that it is a crisis that is getting bigger and bigger, like a blown-up bubble from bubblegum. until it eventually pops, like bubblegum.
I see. So it pops just like those suits.
Yeah. Wait, which suits?
The hard suits that went through the atmosphere.
The space dolphin suits?
Yes.
That I noticed after they crashed that they had taken back on their original form. So presumably right before landing, they turned back into normal people.
Well, they tried to, but they'd all gone through the atmosphere, so they're kind of crunched.
And naked.
Well, that kind of explains why they had to be.
Yeah. Well,
so they could start over.
And then there was a new Genesis, except instead of Adam and Eve, it's Lena and Nene.
It's Eve and Eve.
It's Lena and Nene. They're having crazy adventures wearing coconut bras.
And their suits somehow reform and go rogue so that they can have little tentacles on the inside? Like, that happened to Pris's suit when it went rogue, and it was really, really weird.
Yeah, I'm not... I mean, I can sort of joke about being comfortable with the nudity, even though I'm really not. But when Pris's suit goes super rogue and turns into a monster version of her hard suit, she starts getting jabbed with wiry tentacles, and it made me really uncomfortable. This is, even though I can joke about the nudity being kind of funny, but in this point, it was just really unsettling.
I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to the time when Pris got attacked by an 80s movie. That is random. Goblins that came out of nowhere, or dwarves, or whatever they were supposed to be, they had these little razor-sharp teeth, and they bit her.
Yep, that was Pris getting attacked by little doll boomers, because apparently, in the future, even your toys will be deadly, deadly robots.
Wait, didn't know that Santa used boomers?
That's how he gets everywhere in one night. Wait, does he use boomers, or is he a boomer?
Probably both.
Oh my god.
I mean, even that scene, that scene leads up to Pris having to put on the new hard suit. For some reason, these new hard suits have to be recast every time they're made. So, Pris is going in there with these open injuries, having the stuff poured all over her form, with nothing in between. And,
so,
yeah, ow.
Presumably she has a liquid metal pouring directly into her open wound.
Yep.
That's a very good point. The thing is called inner metal. Don't really know where the name comes from, but...
Maybe that.
The fact that it goes inside of you, that was some serious clairvoyance on Nigel's part. I have a feeling that when Pris puts this on, she's going to be all cut up. Maybe we should call this inner metal.
Pris is like, thanks for that.
Well, you're a prick, Leon. Or, well, not Leon.
But, like, these hard suits have to go over their naked forms, and it's, I don't know, they just look so uncomfortable when they're having these hard suits put on.
Lena seems to be perfectly fine with it once she's gotten used to it, though.
But in Lena fact, is Lena.
So?
Ah, undertones.
Yeah, but that's for everybody. The only person who seems to be bothered by it really is Nene.
You think? Not Pris?
Pris only seems bothered by it because she's cut up. She doesn't seem to mind being nude.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't seem to mind it at all. It's probably partially a Japanese culture thing.
The fact that women can run around naked together?
Yes.
Curse you.
In
Why
anime.
Wasn't I bothered a Japanese woman?
Huh?
Why wasn't I born a Japanese woman?
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Well, okay. If being a Japanese woman got me the opportunity to run around naked with Lena, who is also naked, I could be accepting of it.
But, like, speaking of running, they show these random scenes of these people inside their suits. Naked. Why?
We've actually talked about the nudity quite a bit in the time we've been talking. It really does bother you, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, it becomes a big linchpin in the series animation. I mean, the animation budget seems to go up the minute they go to one of these scenes.
Yeah, I had heard that the animation of 2040 gets kind of bad at the end, but it doesn't really get bad, it just gets extremely inconsistent.
I mean, they look really super spaced out. Sometimes you see a few cross eyes. Sometimes they forget to animate stuff that looks like it should have been animated.
The biggest example of this is in the second to last episode, I think, there is a point where they're fighting outside in space. They beat up some clones of themselves, which we'll get to in a minute. And all of a sudden, they're like, we need to go into this room. And Pris is like, I need to go alone. You guys will not be safe. And Nene and Lena are like, screw you. We're Nightsabers, and we stick together. And instead of showing them bursting into the room all cool-like, they're just in the room fighting. It's as though they switch to a scene of different people doing different stuff, but it's the same people.
Well, they needed more awkward kiss scenes between Leon and Pris. And he tries to kiss her with a hard suit on.
That was actually kind of romantic for Leon.
That kind of doesn't cut it, though, if it doesn't work out for both of them.
Well, it didn't really work out.
Who heard of a one-sided romantic moment?
That worked out for both of them. I have the feeling that Pris was okay with the kiss, but it's more so that she didn't get to do it on her own terms. Pris doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would be okay with having a romantic moment she didn't control.
Maybe that explains the leather she always wears.
What?
Leather.
Yeah.
And Leon's like, it's good to see you wear something besides leather sometimes.
Well, I mean, she was in sort of a t-shirt, and she didn't seem to be wearing a bra, which is a consistent thing for the series, as we've said before.
Yep.
There's not a whole lot of meat on the story after Galatea causes all the boomers to go rogue, because really all there is to it is all the boomers go rogue. The whole city becomes a big rogue boomer factory. It's sort of preluded with the attack on the AD Police Tower, which is one of my favorite moments in the series for Nene, because it proves something very important.
What would you say that is?
When Nene is in her hard suit, she does not seem to be too capable of doing much. When she is in the AD Police Headquarters getting attacked with her bosses, she is suddenly able to take out two or three rogue boomers by herself because she picked up an assault rifle on a table.
She's a projectile specialist. That works.
It's not even that. How is an AD Police assault rifle more effective than the hard suits?
It's the AD Police. How is it effective at all?
Against anything. I guess it helps that the boomers are all a big gelatinous boomer blob.
But it is kind of cool, you know. I love that part of the series, like where they're escaping from the tower.
It actually is something to be said when one of the well-directed, tense moments of the series is when the hard suits are not involved.
Mm-hmm.
Although
it breaks the formula up really well.
I think it's done pretty well. Admittedly, it does help that Pris drives in with a motorcycle with a cannon in it. That
was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. And hell, Nene uses it to good effect herself. In fact, I'm pretty sure she saves Pris with it, which is a weird thought.
And then there's a motorcycle chase scene.
When is there a motorcycle chase? I mean, they drive away on the motorcycle, but...
Just wishful thinking.
I was going to say, they run away on the motorcycle a little bit, but eventually they have to climb to the top of the AD Police. They call it a totem pole, but once you see the sunrise over it, it looks like a penis, honestly.
And they freeze it!
Well, the boomers took it over, so maybe they wanted to make it smaller so the boomers would be embarrassed.
But the boomers are either all really robotic-looking or very feminine. I wouldn't think they'd be bothered by that.
Well, maybe there are a lot of male boomers who are like, finally, we have some phallic imagery of our own. No, it's getting all small. Ah.
But, I mean, they make the male boomers look so mechanical.
Yeah. Although,
and you never see a female mechanical-looking boomer.
Do you? I wouldn't know. It seems less like the mechanical-like boomers have a gender, and more like they all have one default robot voice.
But they have male robot default voices.
Yeah. But that's so, not the point. Well, it's like I said, Mason was the one overseeing boomer production. Maybe he was the one who said, this boomer has a female voice. Uh-huh. But I don't see boobs on it. Well, sir, it's meant to be a steel mill worker. I think you didn't hear me. I don't see boobs on this.
Well, that's Mason. who apparently is also somehow part boomer because there are randomly organs that can be made from boomers and uses transplants.
Yeah, well, I would think that that would be reasonable. Boomers have been shown to be an organic set of robots, so I don't see why you couldn't make an artificial gallbladder out of one.
Well, a lot of the technology just suddenly comes out of nowhere in this series, and they just completely take it for granted, and you have no way of thinking ahead of the characters, because, you know, they take stuff for granted, and you can never see what's coming.
Like what?
Like, what was the one thing? Like the Skyhook. That whole deal seemed to come out of nowhere.
The fact that the Skyhook goes into space, that was always the Skyhook's thing.
Well, when was it even explained?
They show a couple shots of the Skyhook being connected to a meteor or something like that, to a space station. That's really
it. Doesn't really explain what it's for.
They explain it at, like, the very end, but fair enough, that sort of comes out of left field.
Yep.
The idea was to make it so that boomers would have an infinite energy source, which seems reasonable to me, but the idea was to make a giant umbrella. You see Umbrella Placid everywhere, which makes me think that boomers are Wesker's fault. And you make the thing have a bunch of mirrors that collect sunlight, and then they shoot a concentrated beam of energy down at Genom Tower. Which is a really weird thought. Maybe all the people working down in the office is like, why is it always so hot when we leave, guys?
I mean, maybe that was just that station's way of pointing out the obviously evil corporation.
Maybe. That's another thing about it. If it wasn't for the fact that the main villain, or what is it, director, whatever his name is, old guy connected to machines through tubes, his whole idea was to make some sort of super boomer paradise. I don't really understand why it is he doesn't just use his ability to focus a beam of pure sunlight against all of the humans until they, you know, are all dead, and then you could build a bunch of boomers and be fine.
Then the boomers would have a party.
Yeah, boomer party.
And then they'd be all wooby, like the boomers that they show, and they're trying to show that people hate boomers more than they ought to.
I don't even remember a boomer like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a street cleaning boomer, and then someone just kind of flicked a cigarette, and it was talking about how boomers take on the jobs that people don't really want, and, you know, people get to look down on the boomers because of what they do. And it kind of makes me feel sorry for them, and that's kind of the whole point, that you're supposed to love these machines that haven't even been created yet, and that's the morality of the show.
Done much better than it was in Bubblegum Crash. I don't know, that's actually one of the things I think the show... It's an idea that it has, even if it's not done perfectly. The boomers, you find out, were never intended to be robotic servants, as they are clearly shown to be, but rather a whole new form of life. That was the idea originally propagated by Cilia's dad. The idea is that going rogue is basically them overcoming their restrictive programming and gaining self-preservation and sentience that allows them to function the way they were always intended to. It's actually kind of cool. They don't really do anything effective with it, though. It's not an idea that is very realized.
Yeah, it's just, like, their attempts to inject a warm, fuzzy feeling into the series.
It's their intention to inject some semblance of intelligence, and the idea is good. Having, you know, robots actually be these contained living vessels is not a bad plan. It's just this Bubblegum Crisis wasn't by Massimo Nishiro, so it didn't work as well.
So, what was your favorite part of this half of the series?
Space dolphins. I mean, it's not the coolest thing that happens, and it's certainly not the most interesting thing that happens, but I just can't get it out of my mind. Space dolphins.
That's another weird thing that just kind of seemed to come out of nowhere. The ability for them to interact with their suits, which were boomers. Earlier on in the series, we see that you can interact with boomers, talk to them, make them lick stuff off of you. But you don't see that with the hard suits until the very end.
That's because it isn't until this part of the series that they even discover that they are boomers.
But they had discovered that, like, halfway through the series.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
but... the old suits, you never saw it.
Yeah, but that's because it wasn't until the old suits were destroyed that they discovered that.
Right, but they didn't attempt that with the new suits for a really long time.
Yeah, they did.
Hmm.
The
well,
moment
I mean,
they
like
discovered
they
were boomers, the whole idea of using the new suits was that you can manipulate them with your mind.
Right, and it goes over that mental charm that lets you form the suit to begin with, but then it just kind of goes away for a while, and they treat them like the old suits.
Well, you gotta start slow. The only boomer that they interact with like a person is the Moto Slave. Which is, I'm not the kind of person who is easily made sad by certain things, but when Pris is apologizing to the Moto Slave after she's crashed it into the Skyhook transport, I actually thought that was a really sweet scene. I think that's actually one of the cooler scenes. It's actually kind of warming, and it's done a lot better than the scene where Maki dies.
He doesn't die. He's a robot.
Yeah, but when they need to get into Genom Tower to confront Galatea, Maki sacrifices himself because he's hooked into Galatea. So he can interfere with her programming and, like, open her security or something like that. And he does this by turning into a laser and shooting Genom Tower.
A pink laser, no less.
Yeah. Well,
a
just
pink sparkly laser.
Just because you're a laser doesn't mean you can't be fashionable.
But yeah, you did a shoujo self-sacrifice.
Which is actually not too bad a scene when Nene freaks out because Maki sacrifices himself. Except it's a little bit ruined because out of nowhere, Pris just goes, "Holy shit." It's not an unwarranted reaction from her, but it kills the emotion of the scene just a bit.
I didn't pick up on that because I watched that episode in Japanese.
You crazy non-dub person.
Crazy dub person who lets dub moments ruin dub scenes.
That was a coincidence. I think the scene where Pris apologizes to the Moto Slave was done a lot better in English than it was in Japanese.
Did you hear it in Japanese?
Yeah, when you were watching it, I was looking over your shoulder.
Hmm.
I thought it was done a lot better in English because you get a lot more of Pris's character out of it. I think
so
Pris's...
tell me, with the thing where Galatea goes up into space and they're talking about her being a goddess, how much of that gets into the dub?
A fair amount, actually. It's done pretty well across.
Because I know, like, it wasn't always addressed, like, that way, in the dub.
Yeah.
Or at least a couple of lines where it cuts it. What were you saying about Pris's character?
I think Pris's character is actually done a lot more better in English than it is in Japanese. I think you get a lot more of Pris's character across. I think it has something to do with the way a gruff female character is portrayed in English over Japanese. I think in Japanese it's just not, the emotion doesn't come across quite as well. Like, the way she's awkward over her relationship with Leon is the way I would expect it more from Pris when she speaks it in English.
Hmm. To be fair, the English dub voices sound less generic, more embodied of the personalities of each person.
I think that picking Hillary Hag to do Nene was a stroke of brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, picking Hillary Hag to do Nene was a stroke of, at times, painful brilliance. Because
it works.
It works really well, but that raspy squeal of hers is, it's extremely suited to Nene, but it's no less that raspy squeal.
I found Leon's voice, like, less interesting, definitely.
I think, Leon is the one voice I would be willing to give to the Japanese track.
No, not Leon, Lena.
Okay. Leon's dub voice versus her Japanese dub voice, it's a kind of a close contender. I guess I'm just keen on the way Lena sounds in English. I think her emotions come across a little bit better.
I think you're just keen on Lena.
So, what's your point?
Hehe. Anyway, Leon. Leon Peon.
Leon Poo?
Yes.
We didn't talk about Leon's ridiculous nicknames from Nene enough in the last podcast. Leon, let's see, in order, if I remember them correctly, is Leon Poo, Leon Peon, and after he's called Leon Peon the first time, he laments that he used to be called Leon Noodle.
And Leon Peon is even in the original Japanese.
Well, that's gotta be where it comes from, because that doesn't, it rhymes a little bit, but it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I didn't really get that, how that followed in Japanese.
It must be some sort of onomatopoeia, like Peon is the onomatopoeia that sounds when a guy goes to the bathroom. I don't know.
Either that or she is mistakenly calling him Kyun.
Well, doesn't Nene strike you as the kind of person who'd be a big fan of Haruhi?
Maybe.
Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know why Nene keeps getting these bad hard suits, but she kind of makes up for it in her computer stuff.
Yeah, sort of. It doesn't really come to task when they're in the middle of a battle. The big climax for her is that she's almost able to hack Galatea, but then it just doesn't work. It's like, oh, sorry, Nene, you thought you were going to be affected, but no.
Nope, your hacking was canceled.
Yeah, they focus on that little shot of command cannot be accepted for like 5 minutes.
And it's in English, so if you're just watching it in Japanese, you just randomly see this text that wouldn't be all that significant.
I'm sure the Japanese people could get it. Hey, that computer's flashing red. I bet that means that everything is going to be okay.
I don't know why everything's set up in English in Tokyo.
Because as Bubblegum Crisis is a big reference to Blade Runner, it's got a lot of that multiculturalism and cultural meshing to it, which I think is an effective thing for the future. Japan is still very much Japan, but at the same time, it's gotten a lot of the American influence that Japan definitely does.
Yeah, I mean, Tokyo in particular does have more English to it, more of a metropolitan manner, but I just can't see their computers having that much English to them.
I don't know.
Especially not with Red Hat Snack, but what was it? What button was it that was so weird on there in English?
What, Adaton?
Yes, Adaton.
I don't know. I don't even know how to react to Adaton. That was just so dumb. But it's super funny.
I don't know if maybe English makes it look more futuristic somehow.
It's just
Japanese in the Matrix.
It's the same thing that we have. You know how Japanese things sound inherently cool?
They do, but they don't sound any more advanced.
Yeah, but that's the thing. To a Japanese person, English just sounds inherently cool.
Well, yeah.
That's
gratuitous English, I think it's called.
Yeah, it just sounds cool to them. So they're like, yeah, let's go for it. More English, the better. It's sort of like a person in an anime knockoff having really Japanese-sounding fighting moves. It sounds cool.
Yep, but especially a chim Pokemon.
Sure. Although I think that was more of a parody.
Well, yes. And they specifically abused it.
A fair amount. That's sort of all there is to Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040. The ending is so insubstantial because it doesn't make any sense.
And it's abrupt.
It sort of comes out of nowhere. Pris, despite that Lena and Nene had to turn into space dolphins to not burn up in the atmosphere, Pris's hard suit grows wings. And then she lands in the desert.
Somehow Galatea's heart gets turned into being nice and stuff towards the very end. So she's like, okay, Pris, I'm going to put you back on Earth. But your heart's still going to burn up.
Let me say at least one more time that she has a change of heart because Pris stabs through her entire body. And then she suddenly realizes the value of life. Again, it doesn't make any sense. I could explain it, but there's no reason to because it wouldn't make any sense anyway.
And with that, we abruptly end.
Good night, Internet.